Hello, everyone, and welcome to the fourth quarter 2015 Intersil Corporation earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode, and we will facilitate a question-and-answer session towards the end of this call. When you are ready to submit a question, please press star one on your phone. If at any time during the call you require assistance, please signal your line by pressing star followed by zero so that I may assist you. As a reminder, this call is being recorded for replay purposes. I would now like to turn the call over to Shannon Pleasant.
Thank you, and good afternoon. I'm here with Necip Sayiner, Intersil's President and Chief Executive Officer, and Rick Crowley, Intersil's Chief Financial Officer. We will discuss our financial performance and provide a summary of our outlook. After our prepared comments, we will have a Q&A session. Our earnings press release and the accompanying financial tables are available on the investor relations section of our website at ir.intersil.com. This call is also being webcasted, and a replay will be available through February 10th. Please note that the comments made during this conference call may contain forward-looking statements subject to risks and uncertainties that could cause our actual results to vary. These risk factors are discussed in detail in our filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. Also, the non-GAAP financial measurements that are discussed today are not intended to replace the presentation of Intersil's GAAP financial results. We are providing this information because it may enable investors to perform meaningful comparisons of operating results and more clearly highlight the results of core ongoing operations. Non-GAAP financial measures referenced during today's call can be found in the reconciliation of GAAP to non-GAAP results provided in today's earnings press release. I will now turn the call over to Intersil President and CEO, Necip Sayiner.
Thanks, Shannon, and hello, everyone. 2015 wrapped up with Q4 revenue of $126.6 million and year-end revenue of $521.6 million. New program ramps helped us to offset some of the end market weakness that persisted for most of the year, but the new product revenue wasn't enough to enable the annual growth we had anticipated. That said, it was a good year for Intersil in terms of improving the competitiveness and financial strength of the company. Regarding competitiveness, the higher quality of our R&D projects, measured by both revenue potential and differentiation, resulted in a number of very successful product launches in 2015, setting new records for leads generated. Design wins in our focus markets continued to increase as well, with Q4 representing a recent record in design win dollars. Engagement with strategic customers increased dramatically, giving us valuable insight into their product plans and making our own developments for these customers stickier. On the financial front, we made further gross margin improvement for the third consecutive year. Gross margin is a key area of focus for us, and we believe it is a leading indicator of our differentiation in the market. We again successfully controlled operating expenses throughout the year without compromising our R&D plans. This allowed us to maintain strong profitability even at lower revenue levels. The company generated significant cash and continued to return a majority of that cash to our shareholders via one of the highest-yielding dividends in the sector. Looking ahead, we have targeted the most interesting segments of the electronics markets with our power technology. Our latest products are designed into next-generation data center infrastructure, new 2017 and 2018 vehicles, next-gen PC and tablet platforms, and connected devices making up the industrial Internet of Things. We're helping customers reduce power consumption, extend battery life, enable smaller form factors, enhance features, and increase performance. Nearly 3 years into our transformation, I can say that we are at the center of the most complex power challenges in the industry. I will provide more detail on the business after Rick reviews the financial results. Rick?
Thank you, Necip. First, I'll summarize the GAAP results. Fourth quarter GAAP gross margin was 57.6%, down sequentially as expected. Full-year GAAP gross margin was 59%, an increase of 90 basis points compared to 2014. Total fourth quarter operating expenses declined on a sequential basis to $57 million. GAAP OpEx for the full year totaled $322 million, increasing year-over-year as a result of an adverse jury verdict from an intellectual property lawsuit that we are contesting. The GAAP operating loss for the year, therefore, was $14.2 million. For the fourth quarter, operating income was $15.9 million, or 12.5% of revenue. As a result of the reinstatement of the R&D tax credit and other year-end adjustments, the fourth quarter tax provision was a credit of $5.7 million. Q4 net income was $21.3 million, and full-year net income was $7.2 million. GAAP Q4 diluted earnings per share was 16 cents, bringing full-year GAAP diluted EPS to 5 cents. On a non-GAAP basis, fourth quarter gross margin of 57.8% declined sequentially in line with our expectations. The decline was driven primarily by higher manufacturing variances as we continued to reduce on-hand inventory levels. In addition, lower I&I revenue in the quarter resulted in a less favorable mix. For the full year, gross margin was 59.3%, a 100 basis point improvement compared to 2014. This is a great result that highlights the strength of the margins in the new CNC products relative to prior years. We expect to see modest gross margin improvement on a sequential basis during 2016, with the pace of improvement influenced by the recovery in demand for our industrial and infrastructure products. We continue to tightly manage expenses, controlling discretionary spending and hiring to reduce costs without negatively impacting our R&D execution. Q4 non-GAAP operating expenses came in lower than our initial forecast, decreasing to $47.9 million, with R&D investment of $27.6 million and SG&A expense of $20.3 million. R&D remained relatively flat year over year as we continued to execute on our product development plans, while SG&A declined. Looking into 2016, we're expecting R&D investments for the year to grow generally in line with revenue, and we anticipate continued leverage on G&A. Q4 non-GAAP operating income was $25.3 million, or 20% of revenue. This was our 10th consecutive quarter of non-GAAP operating margin of 20% or better. Operating margin for the full year was 20.6%, demonstrating our ability to sustain the profitability gains we've made, even in a weak demand environment. The fourth quarter non-GAAP effective tax rate was negative 12% due to the reinstatement of the R&D tax credit. For 2016, we estimate the non-GAAP tax rate will be in the range of 16 to 18%. Non-GAAP net income was $27.9 million in Q4 and $93.7 million for the year, resulting in non-GAAP earnings per share of 20 cents and 68 cents respectively, of which 4 cents per share was related to the R&D tax credit. Non-GAAP diluted shares outstanding were 138.6 million as we exited the year and are expected to rise modestly throughout 2016. Turning to the balance sheet, cash and cash equivalents increased by $18 million to $247 million at quarter end. Accounts receivable balances decreased by over $8 million sequentially, resulting in record low days sales outstanding and contributing to the strong cash flow during the quarter. We were successful in further reducing on-hand inventory by over $4 million, exiting the quarter at $65 million. In Q1, we expect our on-hand inventory to be flat to down on a dollar basis. Channel inventory also declined by about another week in Q4, reaching the lowest level in 2015, a good starting point for the new year. We spent approximately $13 million in capital expenditures through all of 2015 and expect CapEx for all of 2016 to be about 3% of revenue. Q4 free cash flow was a strong $30 million, of which $16 million was returned to shareholders through our high-yielding dividend. For all of 2015, we generated total free cash flow of $104 million, up substantially from the $64 million generated in 2014. In 2015, we returned 62% of our free cash flow to shareholders and believe that our current dividend continues to be the right vehicle to deliver meaningful capital returns to shareholders over the coming year. 12 months ago, we introduced our long-term success model. It is non-GAAP gross margin of 60% or better, R&D investment in the 20 to 21% range, SG&A expense in the 14 to 15% range, and non-GAAP operating margin of 25%. We continue to make investment decisions based on this model and expect that as revenue levels rise, we will see further progress towards achieving these metrics in 2016. Najib?
Thank you, Rick. Let's start with our CNC business, which
achieved a couple of important milestones in Q4.
Revenue was up over 7% sequentially to quarterly revenue levels we haven't seen since 2014.
Q4 also marked the first quarter of year-over-year growth for the CNC business since 2011.
Benefiting from new ramps, consumer revenue was up significantly quarter-on-quarter. Our first-of-its-kind display power management technology is being deployed in new tablet platforms
that ramped throughout Q4. This was augmented by power management IC wins across mobile platforms
that continued to do well in the quarter. We anticipate
this strength will persist into Q1
in spite of seasonal headwinds. Computing revenue was slightly below the higher run rate established in Q3. As we noted, customers were well-positioned exiting Q3, and demand was therefore relatively stable throughout Q4. Entering Q1, new business resulting from the transition to Skylake is expected to partially offset what is typically a lower seasonal period. For the full year, CNC was down 12%,
with the majority of that decline coming from computing.
There was a notable sequential improvement
in the CNC business over the course
of 2015 as the new products we've developed began to ramp. This reversed the negative trends that persisted throughout 2014. So while CNC was obviously
impacted by weak end market demand
and the related inventory drawdowns, we're seeing significant improvement and a path to growth in 2016. Collectively in Q1, we expect CNC to
counter our normal seasonal decline of about 8%
and instead be flat, plus or minus 3%. I&I represented 62.5% of revenue in Q4, declining about 6% sequentially. Persistent weakness in infrastructure and industrial end market demand
resulted in negative growth sequentially and year-over-year for I&I.
Commensurately for the year, both the power and analog products registered declines. Aerospace delivered a modest growth year, and automotive remained a bright spot with record quarterly and annual revenues as we ended 2015. While we're not anticipating macro conditions to improve significantly
in the near term, based on order activity and strong traction in our automotive products, we do believe Q4 revenue levels
represent a trough for I&I. Specifically, we are expecting Q1 to be flat to up
4% sequentially.
As we assess where we stand strategically, I'm confident we're applying our resources in the right product areas and markets. Power is a central design concern for customers, and Intersil is recognized as a technology leader. We're winning against larger competitors as a function of better performance under a wider range of conditions. We do this through specific know-how developed over decades of power design. In addition, there are a handful of important trends driving demand
for semiconductors
that we're well positioned to benefit from. For example, the electrification of the automobile. The entire tide is rising for the semi-industry as a result of the massive amount of new opportunities for semiconductors in the car. What investors may not realize is that Intersil has already established a beachhead in this market through leadership in rear-view camera applications. We're adding power content in the infotainment console and display, and our opportunity is increasing as 48-volt batteries are being introduced, requiring products we've been investing in. Big data and the cloud have also changed the semi landscape. Increasing storage needs and pervasive connectivity require a lot of infrastructure. In many cases, the cost to power the equipment exceeds the cost of the equipment itself over its lifetime. Every maker of infrastructure gear is trying to increase system density and power efficiency. Intersil's latest generation of point-of-load and core power management products are providing customers with unprecedented power savings. Over the course of the past 18 months, we've been establishing our technology with several major cloud providers and gaining share for next-gen deployments. And finally, a lot has been said about the potential for the Internet of Things driving an explosion of connected portable devices. Further, the industrial Internet of Things, which connects factory floors, data centers, utilities, and transportation of goods, for example, is also creating an opportunity for redesigns of long life cycle industrial products.
Added capability increases the power burden in these products, a design challenge right in Intersil's sweet spot.
With increasing content per system and customer engagements expanding our market share, the growth aspirations we've been working towards are becoming more tangible. We're expecting 2016
to start off better than is typical of the seasonally weak period, with CNC flat and I&I flat to up,
resulting in revenue in the range of $125 to $131 million. Based on a more favorable product mix and higher manufacturing activity, we believe gross margin will be up by 50 to 100 basis points sequentially. Operating expenses are expected to be up seasonally to approximately $50 million. We anticipate GAAP earnings of 8 to 10 cents per share. Earnings per share on a non-GAAP basis, excluding amortization and stock compensation, are expected to be 14 to 16 cents. With that, we'll take your questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Again, that is star followed by 1. First question comes from Tore Svanberg from Stifel.
Yes, thank you. Nice quarter. First question, can you talk a little bit about your visibility so far this quarter? You know, we've heard from other companies that, you know, bookings started picking up towards the end of December and that had sort of continued nicely here in January. So if you could just talk a little bit about your visibility, especially in relation to your guidance, please.
We've had a rather stable bookings pattern throughout fourth quarter. Actually, it was very similar in terms of weekly order dollars compared to Q3. And Q1 also started in a similar solid footing. We have exited Q4 with a book-to-bill slightly over one. And from a historical perspective, I think our backlog coverage to date compared to other first quarters is looking pretty good for the guidance range we provided.
Thank you, Najib. And you mentioned automotive hit a record for you for the year and the quarter. Would you care to tell us how much that is a percentage of revenue right now, and do you eventually intend to break that out of the I&I group?
In the near term, we're not going to break it out per se, but I'm more than happy to tell you the percent of revenues coming from automotive. I believe it was 12%. Both for the quarter and the year. Of course, that represents an increase of share over the past couple of years. I think every year we seem to increase that percentage by about a percentage point.
Okay. Then last question. You mentioned Skylake is sort of bucking the seasonal trend for you in Q1 on the computing side. How should we think about the Skylake cycle for you? And I guess, you know, when does it peak? Does it peak this year, or is it going to go on for a little longer?
Compared to prior transitions of processor generations I looked at with interest. So the transition to Skylake appears to be similar to prior transitions. In Q4, we shipped a similar number of units as we did in Q3. I think Q1 will represent a step up in terms of Skylake units we project to ship, even though overall units we're projecting to ship are coming down in aggregate. So Skylake certainly is going to be a higher fraction of our shipments. Whether the peak will be reached in 2016 or not, I don't have a very clear view, but if you judge by prior transitions, I think in a few quarters we should be there.
Very good. Nice quarter. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Ross Seymore from Deutsche Bank.
Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me ask a question. Just wanted to dive a little bit into the consumer portion of CNC. Nate, can you give us a little bit of color on what was driving what seemed to be almost 15 to 20% sequential growth? And probably more importantly than that, how should we think about 2016 as a whole, just given your knowledge of what you have for design wins? I know end demand is always tricky to call, but just you've talked about the annual growth rate in the past for that, and I was hoping we could get some color this time as well.
Okay. Well, I am going to refrain from giving annual growth targets this time around, but clearly we're at an inflection point in the CNC business. As I alluded to in my prepared remarks, that was a long time coming. We haven't seen year-over-year growth numbers, even on a quarterly basis, since 2011. And this is really the culmination of the design wins we've been talking about for almost a year now. Of course, we expected this inflection point to come a little earlier in 2015 than it did, but for a variety of reasons outside of our control, it came at the very end. And I think that design win pipeline and funnel is going to carry us well into 2016. We have been successful proliferating our products with some of the smartphone makers that are seeing success in their markets. They are growing share, and we are growing our share with them, so that's helpful. I've talked about some tablet wins in the fourth quarter, and there's more of it to come in early part of 2016. So I think that year-over-year growth is going to be very evident as we progress through 2016 for the CNC business as a whole.
Great, that's very helpful. I guess as my one follow-up, switching over to the I&I side, seems like you guys have great traction in automotive. You're benefiting there. But if I take the remaining portion of I&I, it looked like it was kind of down mid-single digits for the year, somewhere in that range. Can you talk a little bit about the outlook for that business? In the past, you said you'd grow in line with the market, and we know it takes a long time for design wins to turn to revenue in there. But walk us through some of the puts and takes as to why that undergrew the market in 2015 and what the expectations should be in 16.
Okay. You know, the product cycles in the I&I side of the house is going to be at least a year longer than what we have experienced on CNC. I think I've been consistent on that front, just owing to the product design cycles with our customers in those end markets. So if we are looking for an inflection point similar to CNC, I think we have to look out a few quarters from where we are. If I look at 2015 in I&I, we've seen sequential declines essentially every quarter. That's in spite of a good showing with automotive and aerospace. I think that trend is looking to reverse itself. I would say that was primarily driven by weakness in infrastructure, and then in the second half, industrial. So I do think the Q4 levels for INI is going to be a trough. We are seeing stability in order patterns. If anything, we are dealing with slightly more expedites this time around than usual. So there are some signs of tangible recovery in that business. What the pace of that recovery will be throughout 2016, that's hard to pin down until our product cycles kick. We're really at the mercy of the recovery of those end markets for us.
Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next question comes from Craig Ellis from B. Riley.
Thanks for taking the question. I'll switch it over to Rick. Rick, you mentioned that channel inventory was at its leanest level exiting the fourth quarter. How does that level compare to where you would like it to be exiting the first quarter, and what are the implications between channel and on-hand inventory for your internal manufacturing utilization in the quarter?
I would say characterize the ending channel inventory, Craig, to be in line with where we would want it to be. You know, if you recall, we took some significant proactive steps to bring down the channel inventory in Q3. I think what we saw in Q4 was really somewhat seasonal and, you know, just the caution out there in the channel. Overall, we're comfortable with the channel inventory. It's in line with historical turns rates for us right now. So that's good. On hand, as we pointed out, we've been bringing that inventory down actively as well over the last couple of quarters. We still want to get the inventory down to days, down to less than 100 days. But we would see that most likely that the, as we talk about the troughs, we brought down inventory pretty hard in Q4. We think that the internal manufacturing decrease between the shutdown and inventory control probably bottomed out in Q4. And we would look to probably provide a little help to the gross margin that we guided up in Q1, although it's primarily mix driving the gross margin guide. And then after that, really the gross margin depends on, and the utilization is tied reasonably closely to the INI and market and how that performs as we go through the rest of the year.
And can you quantify what the weeks of inventory are out in the channel?
No, we don't give that, and it varies all over the place depending on what end market and country it is and who we're serving there.
Okay. Najib, I want to go back to some of the references you made about record design wins in the quarter. It sounds like certainly some of that is helping drive an inflection in the consumer growth. Are you seeing record design wins across all of the segments within the industrial infrastructure group, or is it more selective? Just pinpoint where that activity is particularly strong or where it might not be at your expectations at this point.
I think it's fair to say we've seen growth in design wins across all business units in 2016. To quantify the improvement across the company, we've seen approximately a 20% increase in design wins. So it was a good year and ended on a high note with participation from essentially all product lines. I would point out, though, that I think we've seen significant improvement in automotive, a pretty rich pipeline of design wins and INI power on the INI side of things. Some of them we may see turn into revenue sometime in 2016. Majority will probably be a 2017 story. But it has been relatively broad, the improvement in design wins we've seen in the second half of 15 in particular.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next question comes from John Pitzer from Credit Suisse.
Hi, this is Charles Kazarian on behalf of John. Excuse me if this question has already been asked, but relative to your Q4 consumer guidance, I think there were some comments on there around the favorable China handset product cycles. If you could just maybe talk a little bit about how that played out during the quarter and then how you kind of view your China handset exposure relative to the smartphone market in general and China in specific, please.
Sure. I think CNC in general came pretty much in line with what we expected. There are puts and takes when you get to the customer level. I think some of the smartphone vendors who have been successful in improving their market share and unit shipped in 15 in China are among our key customers, and we've benefited from their favorable trends. But it is not a uniform story, as you well know. Some of those customers predicted a much better 2015 for their business. And collectively, I would say the overall unit demand that was realized in 15 versus our expectations were a tad lower. But I'm pleased to report that those who have been successful and are gaining share have opted to use our products on more of their models. So this should have some legs into well into 2016 for us.
Thank you.
Next question comes from Gus Richard from Northland.
Yes, thanks for taking my question. Nature, you talked a little bit about your design win momentum at the cloud players, and I was wondering, is that primarily servers or is it other equipment used in the data centers?
You know, some of the notable design-ins we have so far for next generation processors known as the VR13 generation has been with some hyperscale data center providers. And we do have design wins with our multi-phase solutions, not only in the server domain, but also with higher-end desktop as well as telecom infrastructure. But I would see that the big needle mover for that product line will be linked to the next-gen data center deployment.
Okay, so as a follow-up, that you expect these designs to ramp probably in the first quarter of next year or start to ramp in the first quarter or at the end of this year? Any timing on the ramp?
That's about right, and that's really predicated to the availability of the next-gen processors. But that is what we know as of today in terms of timeline, end of this year, very early next year.
Perfect. Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your phone. Again, that is star followed by 1. Next question comes from Chris Caso from Susquehanna Financial Group.
Yes, thank you. For a first question, you just comment on broader business conditions. And obviously, the commentary that you provided, particularly with respect to I&I, was somewhat consistent with what we heard from others, you know, such as LTC. when they reported. The investor questions that you know we've received and you'll probably receive just have to do with you know some of the other macro data that's out there, and obviously the reaction of the stock market that seems to be sending a different message. I wonder what you can share with regard to what your customers are telling you regarding the order patterns that might provide you with a little more confidence that you know what you're seeing is indeed real. And I guess you know just in context of what happened the back half of last year, could it be that the customers that reduced orders the back half of last year reduced them enough such that you know we can see a little bit of improvement from just those levels despite a continuing macro difficult condition?
Sure, I'll try to provide some concrete data with the hope of this being helpful in assessing the situation we see out there. In addition to talking to some of the larger customers, we also very closely look at the sell-through data from our distribution channel. And what we've observed is that it reached a point of stability. We've, I think, gone through a classic inventory correction late Q2, Q3 for us and to some degree in Q4, where the distribution channel adjusted significantly their level of inventory. You know, this is always amplified compared to any small change in the overall demand that they see. You know, the negative trends that persisted pretty much through the second half certainly reached a point of stability, and now we are seeing some signs of recovery, whether that comes through some expedite requests or what we get in terms of forecasts from our distribution channel or anecdotal evidence from talking to some of the larger customers. They all seem to indicate a level of stability. Things certainly are not, from what we observe, deteriorating any further, Chris.
Okay, great. That's helpful. And then with respect to just your business, in 2015, I believe that you were still engaging in exit of some lower margin products as you went through 2015. I guess firstly, are we to assume that exit and that headwind is now done? And there's a way that you can quantify perhaps how much that headwind was in 2015 and kind of strip it out of your results as looking at it as a baseline to grow from 2016?
Yeah, I think the answer to the first part of your question is relatively straightforward. In our current run rate exiting 2015, there's essentially none left that we want to disengage from, or very little, if any. So I would say we have gone through that process of pruning the portfolio. This has affected, of course, the year-on-year comparisons when you look at 2015 as a whole and compare it to 2014. In early part of 2015, I think there was still some in the CNC business that is almost completely gone now. I don't have good numbers off the top of my head that I can share with you, Chris. We have shown it in some of the previous IR presentations, but I don't have a good dollar or percent figure to give you for all of 15 right now.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Final question comes from Ross Seymour from Deutsche Bank.
Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me ask a follow-up. Two quick ones. First, how should we think about the computing TAM since you have a competitor leaving and then the content going up in Skylake? Just from a kind of a annual basis, how do you think that increases the opportunity for Intersil?
I think for the vCore portion of the computing TAM, that is going to increase with next-generation Skylake processors. Any unit reductions that you may forecast for 16 and 17 are measurably less than the content increase for us and other players. There are other parts of the computing platform that are not that is not affected by the processor change, such as the battery charger or chargers or other peripherals that represent a portion of our business. Net, there will probably be some modest increase in the available market for the computing business, and I think this is going to become a little more visible as 2016 progresses and the fraction of Skylake processors increase.
That's perfect color. And then my last follow-on, Najib, either you or Rick, if we were to say that revenues are just going to be flat this year, 2016 versus 15, what would you expect your gross margin to do? Or if you don't want to say, you know, the absolute number, what would be the puts and takes within that that would drive the gross margin?
I think that it really depends on the mix. I think that's the major put or take, as we alluded to in the comments and in the Q&A so far. You know, we expect gross margin to improve modestly throughout the year, in from where we put up in Q4, and partly is because we bottomed out on we think in both I&I revenue and as well as capacity utilization as we were bringing the inventory down pretty hard. So we're seeing expect improvement in Q1. You know, beyond that, it really depends on the mix between CNC and I&I and how I&I might improve to move us up closer to our target.
Great. Thank you.
I would now like to turn the call back over to Shannon Pleasant for closing remarks.
Thank you very much for joining us today. This now concludes today's call.